This is Dr. Jay Corsandi, and you're listening to The Best Night Ever, the show that's dedicated to helping you get your best night's sleep. Over the last 20 years of treating patients, I've worn many hats, including dentist, engineer, psychologist, artist, corporate executive, and more. I've found that the key to success, health, and longevity lies in sleep, and that's why I created this show. I want to teach you how to make sleep your best friend. Join me on a journey to uncover cutting-edge science, life-changing tips from renowned experts, ancient and modern sleep secrets, game-changing routines, and lifestyle hacks that will educate, inspire, and ultimately help you get the best night ever. All right, folks, welcome back to the show. And in this episode, I am going to be speaking with Angela Foster. Now, Angela and I met a while back, and she invited me to be a guest on her show, the High Performance Health Podcast, and I was so impressed with her knowledge base that I had to get her on my show and share that with you. Now, just a little bit about Angela. She is a nutritionist, health and performance coach, and her clients include CEOs, entrepreneurs, executives, and athletes, and she helps them optimize their lives through a combination of modern science, biohacking, and epigenetics. And speaking of epigenetics, we are going to be talking about what that actually is in this show and how you can use it to your advantage. We are going to touch base on the three pillars of health that I always mention. One is going to be diet and nutrition. One is going to be movement and fitness. And the other is going to be my favorite, which is sleep. We're also going to be talking about one area of her expertise, which is DNA. Now, she offers services where you can submit a test and the results will help dictate what you should do, what you should eat, and how you should sleep. Things like how you should work out. Things like what diet might be the best for you and what foods might not be the best for you. And things like when you should go to sleep and when you should wake up. And all kinds of different ways to optimize your day. So stick around. This episode is going to be very informative, a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And hopefully you'll pick up some tips and tricks and some new ways to optimize your health. And as always, if you want to learn more about me, you can follow me on my Instagram account at Sleep Biohacker. That's where I share all these different tips, tricks, biohacking stuff, which we talk a lot about, videos, routines, supplements, and more. And I'm very excited to share my new website with you. And guess what it's called? Surprise, surprise, sleepbiohacker.com. That's where you're going to find more information about me, the podcast, other shows that I've been on, and the products that I love and use every day to help optimize my health and life. Please do check it out if you get a chance. Let me know what you think. You can shoot me a message on Instagram or social media, and I'd love to hear feedback on the new website, sleepbiohacker.com. And if you find this episode helpful, please write a review or share it with a friend or two. That way we just help to get the word spread and more people can benefit, and I can get more awesome guests like Angela to share their expertise. And with that said, on to the show. All right, Angela, we are live and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jay. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, actually, welcome to my show because you welcomed me to your show just recently, the High Performance Health Podcast, right?
You did. And that was super fun and really interesting. And I think that's literally just gone live as we're speaking now. So amazing content that you shared there. Thanks again.
My pleasure. And I was so excited to be on your show and learn from you as well that I wanted to have you on mine. And here we are now recording this, what's going to be an epic podcast. So everybody stay tuned.
Amazing. Thank you.
You started out as a corporate attorney, but that's not what you do now. Can you share a little bit with people about your journey of how you ended up doing what you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. So as you say, I did start off as a corporate lawyer and I was working in a lot of mergers and acquisitions and flotations, and it was cross-border, you know, it was transatlantic stuff. So I remember on one, for example, I was working between India and California and the UK, and so had very, very little sleep. I was doing that, really burning myself out for a number of years in my 20s and my early 30s, kind of climbing that corporate ladder and getting to partnership. And then when I had my three children, I pretty much had kind of adrenal fatigue by that point. And that really set me up for what was to come. So I had pretty bad postnatal depression with all three of my children, and it was worsening with each child. And then finally, I was diagnosed with chronic depressive disorder after my third child, which I'm thankful to say now, actually, I don't believe I have. And I kind of went against the guidance of the psychiatrist at that point. But what ultimately happened is my immune system was really lowered and my kids got sick. They had a cough that was going around and I kind of then got that flu and things went downhill pretty quickly. And I ended up in hospital with viral and bacterial pneumonia on both lungs, on oxygen, kind of fighting for my life. And that was a real turning point for me. It sounds a bit woo-woo when I say it because that was a real moment for me. But being there in hospital, I think I'd spent so much of my time in my head where I just wanted to run away from myself, turn my mind off. And obviously when you're in hospital on your own, there you are, right? It's like that book, wherever you go, there you are. And so at that moment, I kind of realized, actually, I'm okay being me. I'm okay being here. And I wanted to fight and I wanted to get better. And that really then sparked this interest in me of how could I combine that sort of high performance with health, so with optimal health. And I began a new journey. I'd got a little bit into nutrition before, because before I had my children, while still practicing, I was diagnosed with PCOS and insulin resistance. So I was actually put on metformin, the diabetic drug, and I couldn't tolerate that at all. And I'd had quite extensive surgery. So at that point, I'd begun researching, how can I improve my PCOS with kind of nutritional and lifestyle factors. So it kind of been there and I'd always been quite a fit person. But then this was after the hospital stay and getting better and making recovery. That was actually a new beginning for me. And then I started researching and taking lots of courses and completely retrained as a health coach and performance coach and then a nutritional therapist.
Okay. And these days you are a host of your own podcast as well as a coaching platform that you've developed and you're helping people unlock their health with the help of DNA and epigenetics. I think everybody has a good idea or a fair idea of what DNA is, but not a lot of people have heard the term epigenetics. Could we talk a little bit about what that is? And then we'll get into more details of what it can do for you.
Yeah, for sure. So as your listeners will know, your DNA is kind of like your underlying program, if you like. So it's always saying what proteins and enzymes and hormones to make. So I like to think of it as the kind of software program that we're running on. But like any program, it's basically the inputs that are coming in terms of environment, lifestyle, nutrition, which is a separate area on its own, nutrigenomics, that's all having an impact on how our DNA is actually expressing itself in real time. So we can kind of be upgrading the system, if you like, or downgrading it. And that's really the most simple way to explain epigenetics is how our environment is actually acting on our DNA. And so then we're looking at the expression of those genetics. And actually that's much more important than what our underlying DNA is. And that's what the new science is showing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people use this term biohacking now as the more fancy way to describe epigenetics, but it's a new way of looking at things because I think a lot of people in the past would say, well, it's in my genes or it's in my family and that's what I'm going to be predisposed with. So to know that we can actually start to control the environment through different factors, one of them is nutrition, which we're going to talk about next, but all these different ways where we can modify the genetic expression to our advantage, or I guess disadvantage too, if we're doing things the improper way as well too. So Speaking of nutrition, you mentioned nutrigenomics. Diet, I guess, is a way to control genetic expression, but not one size fits all. Can you tell me a little bit about how diet and genes are interrelated?
Yeah, for sure. So, and this has affected me personally as well, actually. So if we look at the way that we each process the macronutrients in our diet, so the two, not so much protein, but carbohydrates and fats, then we all process these differently, depending on our underlying DNA. So some people might get on really, really well with the ketogenic diet, and it might upgrade their mental focus. They may lose weight on it. And you'll find this commonly with people. They might say, you know, women might say, oh, my husband was on the keto diet and that was amazing. He lost loads of weight. And why aren't I losing any? And actually, if they were looking at their blood results and testing it, it may be causing underlying health issues as well as them not getting results. And that's because, as I say, our DNA is so different. So some people will be much more sensitive to carbohydrates. And they will process those carbohydrates at a far faster rate, than another individual. So what that means is that they're going to metabolize those sugars, because all carbohydrates get broken down into simple sugars, as you know. And so they're going to metabolize that much faster, which means insulin's then going to go up in response to that blood sugar response. And that insulin is a fat storage hormone. So that will contribute to why they can't lose weight if they're eating lots of carbs. Similarly with fats, we know that people process fats in very different ways. So there's a small section of the population that are much more predisposed to higher levels of cholesterol and more predisposed to heart disease. But the great thing about this is by understanding certain components of your DNA, you can then actually adjust your nutrition so that you've got the right proportions of macronutrients and lower your risk of chronic diseases. And it's not just saturated fats that you can look at, but you can also look at the way you're metabolizing omega-6s, which we can talk about in a bit more, omega-3s, which are very anti-inflammatory, so that you can get the right balance and essentially live younger for longer.
So you mentioned someone that has predisposition for carbohydrate high uptake. Is that what you were saying? What would be like the modification for someone like that?
So for someone like that, then they would want to be making sure that they weren't having more than around 15% of their total calorie intake from starchy carbohydrates. So ideally, people wouldn't be consuming fast-burning carbs, like things like processed foods, like bread and pasta. But even starchy carbs, in somebody who's very carb-sensitive, depending on their activity levels, because that will affect it, they probably don't want to be going higher than around 15%. So for them, including much more green vegetables, vegetables that are much lower in starch, and also higher levels of protein and higher levels of healthy fats is going to help them stay at their ideal weight much more easily than if they keep triggering this insulin response. And I saw that myself, actually, because what's interesting is I mentioned earlier that I had polycystic ovarian syndrome. Now, there's some interplay between that and the way that we, and that's why I was put on metformin, because of insulin resistance. So if insulin is really high, that can actually affect luteinizing hormone, okay, which helps the egg kind of pop out of the follicle. So it can affect fertility. And in me, when I've looked at my DNA subsequently, I'm very, very highly sensitive to carbohydrates, which doesn't come as a surprise because I have a strong family history of diabetes on both sides of the family. And actually, on my father's side, there's been a lot of chronic kidney disease and kidney failure. So for me, I'm very kind of conscious of that and didn't want that to happen. It's not just body composition goals, but also long-term health goals. And that's been much better managed now by me adopting a much lower carbohydrate diet.
Okay, so we can affect genetic expression through control of our diet. Does your genetic or your genes predispose you to have certain conditions as well too? Like let's say diabetes or heart disease, can you be more at risk if you look at your DNA analysis and see that?
Yeah, sure. You can be more at risk because if you've got those underlying genetics and then you continue to consume food in the way that you currently are. So for example, like the standard American diet, which is very high in pro-inflammatory foods, like foods that are high in sugar and high in processed fats, they're going to be much more predisposed to heart disease and diabetes. But that's also why we'll see differences in some people. Maybe other people are not as at risk, if you like. And that's what the science shows, is not everybody will have this big blood sugar spike in response to eating the same foods. It's very individual.
So I could see how that could be part of the customization plan where you start to look at these different profiles and then start to direct them through different dietary guidelines so you can get more optimized. I know most people, when they eat, they're just shooting in the dark. They don't know if this is something that's benefiting them or hurting them. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit more. You mentioned omega fatty acids, omega-3s and omega-6s. This is something that I'm still trying to understand more of. I know I take my fish oils, but what else can I do with those? Or what should I know about them?
Yeah, sure. So again, what we'll see in some people, so there's differences, a few differences. Some people have a higher need for omega-3s and other people regulate omega-6s to the pro-inflammatory cycle, much more. It's a process called elongation. Mm. And so that may be, they may be much more sensitive on them. So those two things are having an interplay. So if we look at those first, if someone has an increased need for omega-3, that helps to bring down inflammation levels in the body. Now, we can increase their omega-3s, but then what we've got to look at is what sources are they going to get those omega-3s from? So they can get it from some plant-based foods, things like flaxseed and walnuts, but they can also get it straight from the animal source, okay? So omega-enriched eggs or fish is probably the best source. Now, when we look at within that, in terms of consuming those omega-3s, if we're having it from an animal source, that animal or fish effectively has basically taken the omega-3s and converted them into the forms that we need, which are DHA and EPA. EPA is very good at lowering inflammation. DHA is amazing for brain health and eyes. Now, we're not actually necessarily that good at converting. So in humans, if we take a vegetarian source, the conversion rate can actually be as low as between 2 and 10%. So for me, for example, that's something I know about my genetics. So I wouldn't think about prioritizing vegetarian sources. I go straight to those animal sources. Similarly, there'll be other individuals, and it may be the same individual who actually has an increased omega-3 need, who doesn't convert very well into EPA and DHA, and actually upregulates those omega-6s. So a lot of people are consuming vegetable oils, thinking, well, okay, I must avoid trans fats. Vegetable oils are good. They're touted as healthy. Whereas in actual fact, those are pro-inflammatory. They often are oxidized. And then the way that their body's processing them puts them at greater risk of inflammation, which we know that inflammation and high blood sugar variability are two of the main causes of many of the diseases that we're seeing. So by understanding, it's the FADS1 and FADS2 genes, by understanding these and the way that they work in your body, you can really prioritize both the amount and the food sources that you're getting.
That's amazing. And that's something I wasn't aware of, the different predispositions to the omega-3s and 6s and upregulation channels. So, I mean, I'm just shoving down fish oils left and right, hoping that it helps, and I'm checking my levels, but there is more to it than what meets the eye. And it can get, yeah. It sounds like it can get a little complex as well too.
Yeah, it can. But knowing your levels is great, because then obviously, or your underlying DNA, if you like, then you can test your levels, as you say, and you can see what those absorption rates are like and adjust accordingly.
Let's talk about stress here. And I've got friends who go through life more effortlessly. They seem to care less, or they get stressed out less about things, especially even during this time. Some people are just more relaxed. Other people seem to be more anxious or predisposed to stress. And I wanted to see what your thoughts are as far as the genetic component. Are we able to see if there are certain markers that will tell if you're going to be an individual that's more predisposed to stress?
Yes, very much so. And actually, a company called DNA Fit have done quite a bit of research in this, particularly in relation to the military. And they were looking at, are certain individuals more susceptible to things like post-traumatic stress disorder as well, so that they can identify those individuals ahead of time and give them more stress management and relaxation techniques. And what the literature shows is the COMP gene, which is dictates the way that you process dopamine, has an impact on your perception of stress. So for some individuals, they are, as you say, they worry much more, and they may perceive an event as much more stressful. And those we would categorize as kind of a strategist. Now, in a highly stressed situation, they may not perform as well. But on a day-to-day basis, they probably perform better, because they're naturally more motivated and kind of more on the ball. Whereas you'll have other people who seem very laid back and have this unique ability to handle high levels of stress. But then those are the people that maybe on the day-to-day actually need a little bit of a kick up the backside, because unless there's a stress environment created. So classically, I don't know if you found this in med school, but certainly as a lawyer, when I was reading all those cases, I probably left things quite to the last minute, and that stress would fuel me on. Interestingly, when I look at my genetics, yes, you know, I'm what they call a warrior, not with an O, with an A. So I don't have that degree of perception of stress. But then when the pressure's on, I'm there and I'll perform really, really well. And for those, that's why I like to look at genetics, because what I find is actually people love this information, and then they can start to prioritize their day. We can talk about circadian rhythm in a moment, but also they can start to understand, well, you know, why is it I'm more productive sometimes than others? And it's really due to the way that they perceive situations.
Do you think it could be also a potential hindrance, where if you know this information, you might act in a negative way, where, oh, well, you know, I'm going to be predisposed to this, so I might as well just take it as it comes.
Take it as it comes. I think when people understand the kind of epigenetic component, that actually we have more power than we realized, and we can really influence them in a positive way, most people I work out really work with are very excited by it, and they want to make those changes. So, yeah.
I think of like the Alzheimer's, the APOE4 gene and things like that, where sometimes I debate, you know, is it something I want to know, or do I not want to know, because I don't want to worry about it. But on the other hand, if I do know, then I can take actions to help prevent it as much as possible. So I'm on the camp with you as far as, you know, knowledge is power.
I think so. Yeah.
So let's talk about both of our favorite topics, circadian rhythm. I think we touched on it a little bit on your podcast as well too. How can we structure our best day for performance based off our genes?
Yeah, so this is another interesting one. So you and I were both talking about the work of Dr. Michael Bruce and the chronotyping. And actually, you can find out this information as well through your genetics. Interestingly, when I've looked at both and I've compared my results from the questionnaire against my DNA, they correlate very, very closely. So he talks about lions being the early morning type, which is I'm one of those, and that came out genetically. But we can actually dive into a bit more detail and work out, well, how well do we sleep? So I know he talks about dolphins being the sort of lighter sleeper and they don't sleep very well. So for me, for example, what my genetics indicate is that I'm a light sleeper, so I'm more likely to be disturbed, but I'm an early morning person as well. And then you can also see how much sleep you need. So most people need between 7 and 9 hours sleep. I think we know that isn't it something like, you probably know these figures way better than me, but I think it's something like the chances of you needing 4 hours or less of sleep a night is so small genetically that you're more likely to be struck by lightning or something crazy. Is that right?
Yeah. There's a genetic mutation that historically there's been people that can function on 4 hours of sleep. But like you said, the chance of that is like winning the lottery. It's so rare. People think it's more common, but it's really not. It's a very, very rare genetic anomaly.
Yeah. And you see people, don't you? Like Margaret Thatcher was notorious for saying, I think Reagan was the same. They only needed like 4 hours sleep a night. And actually, you can't necessarily correlate it that closely, but they both ended up with dementia, I think. And, you know, you're not, that lymphatic system's not working properly. So
I think there was a little ego behind that. I don't buy it. I mean, people say 6 to 9 hours. I've heard all these different ranges. I sleep about 7.5 hours a night. I mean, that seems to be optimal for me. And I've had this discussion with Dr. Bruce and other sleep experts where maybe pushing on the higher end of sleep, you know, over 9+ hours, you're getting to the point where there might be some underlying metabolic issues that are making your body require more sleep than it really needs. You know, I think optimally or healthy people should probably need a little bit less sleep than normal people. I know in my practice where I treat patients for sleep disorders, you know, snoring and sleep apnea, these people can say they sleep 10 hours and feel unrefreshed. So that's my thoughts on sleep duration. But let's get back to the genetics and the sleep chronotypes.
Yeah, sure. So looking at that and understanding genetically what type, because it is such a genetic thing with the chronotype. Now we can influence that a little bit in terms of trying to move it, as you know, further forward or turn yourself into someone, not quite someone that you're not. I think it's really difficult if you're married or you're in a long-term relationship and one of you is a night owl and the other one is an early morning person. It's like, should you have a sleep divorce? But we can begin to influence it a little bit using things like light, which we can talk about. But understanding your underlying genetics allows you then to organize your day. Because if it turns out you are an early morning person, then it's very likely that your best work is going to be done in the morning when you're bright and you're awake and the cortisol levels are higher and kind of motivated. So for me, for example, that was actually one thing I really struggled with as a corporate lawyer. I mean, lawyers don't start work. And I think it's the same in the US until like 9:30, 10. And even then, it's kind of get in, have a coffee, but they'll be happily working till midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. And that didn't suit me at all as an early morning lark. So I very much structure my day, get my best work done in the morning. I also find that I think when you look at the circadian clock in terms of looking at physical activity, you know, for some people, that coordination, for everyone really, the coordination and the cardiovascular strength is greater in the afternoon. But actually, you might be shifting that slightly earlier if you were designing your ideal day and you're an early morning person compared to somebody who's a night owl. Again, you know, often night owls will end up doing their best work in the late afternoon or sometimes even, you know, burning a midnight oil. So it's very helpful. Less helpful, I guess, if you're in a typical 9-to-5 job, but then pretty much half the population actually suits that schedule, right?
Yeah. So you touched on another aspect of the pillars of health that I always talk about. One is, you know, nutrition, one is sleep, and the third one is movement or fitness or exercise. In your programs, in your coaching, you teach something called personalized fitness. Now, when I hear the word personalized fitness, I think of like going to the gym and hiring a trainer to tell me what weights to lift and how to do it. But your perspective on personalized fitness is coming from a more scientific or genetic component or background. So how can we optimize our fitness or exercise or routines based off of our genetic composition?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting point that you raise there. And what we see is that the science shows you can actually get 3 times the results if you're doing a genetically matched program compared to a genetically mismatched program. And that's based on some research with athletes. And so what we can look at there is quite a few different markers. So we can look at the power and endurance and strength ratio of the individual. So we can see how much power potential do they have, how much endurance. And this is largely based on their proportion of, you know, slow and fast twitch muscle fibers, and what's their strength ratio, and then design their workouts around it. So it doesn't mean that you choose. So I have to be careful to say this, because you couldn't then say, try to influence children and say, right, you could be a 100-meter athlete, you know, and win a gold medal because you have the sprint gene. Now, the sprint gene, a little bit like chronotyping with sleep, is very much genetic. It's either there or it isn't. So that's the ACTN3 gene. You either have it, you don't, you have one copy, you have two copies. But if we understand what your genetics are, then we can customize your workouts so that you do them in the minimal amount of time, number one, so it's time saving, and also you're very targeted in what you do. So let's take, for example, somebody who's trying to run a 5 or 10K, so that's more of an endurance event. How much time to increase their speed are they going to spend on interval training compared to longer endurance workouts? Well, if we see that actually they have a greater power potential, then they want to be doing more of their training in that zone. Similarly, if you're looking at weight training, is somebody, we know that kind of 10 to 12 reps is the hypertrophy range, for example, and then it's lower for sort of power and higher for endurance. But within that, we can actually adjust lower or higher according to their power and endurance ratio. So it can be really targeted with the workouts, and that really gets to the results. Similarly, what we can see is how vulnerable are people to injury, and that's looking in part at the collagen networks in the body in terms of the connective tissue, but also what's their VO2 max potential, and also how do they process lactic acid. So for example, with me, I can see that I have, by testing my genetics, that I have average production of lactic acid, but I have above average clearance. So for me, going out and doing lactate threshold training, which is pretty awful, more than once every 2 to 3 weeks, even if I'm training for an endurance event, isn't necessary because my clearance is actually very good. Whereas if your clearance wasn't that good, then that would be an area that you would be looking at. So it's really fun. I mean, it's definitely another form of biohacking. It's fun to play with, but it's also even more fun to get the results off the back of it.
Do these tests also tell you the best time to exercise, as well as all these other factors you mentioned?
I think that's more individual. So I think in some ways, so when we're looking at the circadian clock, if you are more of an early morning person, then you probably will find it easier to do the workouts earlier in the day because you're going to have way more energy, for example, so you can structure them then. I don't think necessarily going really early is always helpful. I mean, I think there's some kind of stat, like there's never been a medal in the Olympics won before midday or something like that. So for the most part, we are more efficient in the afternoons.
Okay. So we've been talking a lot about DNA and testing and health optimization from that aspect. Tell me more about this DNA test, or what it involves, or how someone actually goes about getting this type of information. What do they do? How does it work?
Yes. So it's a very easy thing to do because it's simply just a saliva test that you do in your own home. It takes around 60 seconds where you swab the inside of your mouth and then send it off. You don't need to worry. You know, it lasts pretty well as well in transit. So I quite often will send the tests internationally. It really comes down to looking at what type of test is right for you. So we can look at ones where you do arrays, which are sections, certain SNPs that we look at to understand what your underlying genetics are. Or you can do full exome sequencing, which is a bit more expensive, but then you find out more information. You can find out things like ancestry, cancer risk, and more. So yeah, often the starting point is kind of working out how much information you want to know, but you can get actually a lot from array testing.
One of the biggest genetic testing companies out there is 23andMe. If people have already done that, is that data then available for processing through like another website and get that information, or do they need to do a completely new test?
Yeah, so often you can process the 23andMe. They don't test everything. So the full exome actually goes further, but you can get most of the information. And the thing about 23andMe is if you have it, then you can basically put it through different ones. So you can put it through DNA Fit, you can put it through Dr. Rhonda Patrick's, you can use, and each one will give you different information. And then, you know, you can work with someone like myself or for a program to actually then utilize that and put it into practice.
That was my next question. Is this something that once you get the reports back, is it something that the average person can interpret, or do you need or recommend having a coach or a practitioner review the results with you?
Yeah. So some people can, depending on which algorithm they've put it through. So like DNF, it's very usable, for example, it's very user-friendly. But even with that, what I found is people kind of get the reports and then it's all excitement. It's like, wow. And then, oh, I don't really know what to do with it now. So it's always the implementation, isn't it? That's where the secrets really are. And that's where the magic starts to happen. And I think that comes down to coaching or taking yourself through a program so that you can really use it and keep that momentum and then get those results.
One of the things that's been popular now too is this gut microbiome testing, things like Viome. Mm. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's still kind of developing. I've done it, you know, with a few clients. I think it's learning. It's based on an algorithm again, and I think it's learning all the time. I think we'll see a lot better things over the next sort of 5 years or so in relation to microbiome testing.
Yeah.
But it's a really important area because also they're looking at then the DNA of those organisms within us as well. So it's a fascinating area.
That's what I've heard as well when I talk to different people in the field regarding that test, that it's good information, but it just needs more of it. They're using, you know, big supercomputers and artificial intelligence to understand it all, but I don't think it's there yet, but I think it's something that's going to get better and better. One of the other things I'm interested in is, and I know you are, is anti-aging. And one of the big words with anti-aging is telomeres and telomere lengths. And there's tests for that as well too. Can you just quickly touch on that?
Yeah. So these are like the telomeres, obviously, are, they look almost like the ends of shoelaces, the caps, and they get shorter and shorter. They're on the end of your DNA. And that's one way of identifying how you're aging. That's one test you can do. You can also look as well at, and I've got one to do actually at the moment that I'm about to do, which is on how much you've been methylating. So for example, if you've been over methylating, that can indicate that you're aging at a faster rate. And that's one area actually that we didn't touch on as well with genetics, is you can look and see what your underlying, like MTHFR gene is the key one. There's a few of them in terms of how well you methylate as well. But there's loads of exciting tests that that are coming out all the time. And I think this concept of, I like to think of it as, we can become the CEO of our health, right? We can direct our health outcomes. And I just think it's really exciting times to be in.
Yeah, you mentioned methylation. I learned the hard way about the MTHFR because I had my own journey as well too, where, you know, 5 years ago, I was getting constantly sick with all kinds of different immune system dysfunctions and getting illnesses that are only in young kids and elderly. And, you know, I was seeing infectious disease specialists and all kinds of things. And one of the things at the end of the day, once I discovered what was going on, was a definite shortage in vitamin D, which I fixed. And the other was, I was taking a whole range of B vitamins. And every time I would take them, I would get really nauseated and flushed and just felt ill every time I was taking some of these B vitamins. And then I did some testing and I realized I have the MTHFR mutation. And once I started taking methylated B vitamins, that problem went away, and I actually started feeling the benefits and the energy of some of these B vitamins, which I was never, ever getting my entire life. So that's just one little aspect of how I was able to kind of hack my energy and B vitamin levels. And this is information that, if had I not known, I would have kept doing the same thing over and over and just not gotten anywhere. So
yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And that's something, yeah, you can look at as well. Like, what are the levels of B vitamins that you need underlyingly? How well does your vitamin D receptor gene work? You know, how efficient are you at processing that vitamin D from the sun? So for some people, they're not, depending on where their ancestry is. People with darker skin often are not as good at it. And that, again, impacts things like bone density, obviously. And there's a lot of people don't realize as well that there's an interplay between the vitamin D receptor gene and caffeine intake. So for some individuals, that can directly affect their bone density. So all these things come into play. But as you say, yeah, super powerful to understand it.
All right. So as we're recording this, both you and I, and I'd say the majority of the world, is in this quarantine lockdown where this whole virus pandemic is going on. And people are looking for ways to keep healthy, stay healthy, boost their immune system. What are some recommendations or hacks that you can share with people to avoid getting sick and stay healthy?
Yes, there's quite a few. I think there's a number of ones that they can do. I actually have a free guide on this in terms of like nutritional hacks that they can use. So what things they should be looking for in their diet, like collagen-rich foods are amazing for the immune system. Things like bone broth, for example, and a whole host of like antioxidant-rich foods as well. B vitamins, as you mentioned, making sure they're getting plenty of exposure to sunlight is really important. Obviously not like overdoing it and avoiding, you know, the sun in the peak of the day, but getting outside and making sure that they get those vitamin D levels boosted, you know, in like North America, like yourself, although you're a lot further south than me, but in the UK as well, we've just come out from, you know, a long winter where a lot of people will be depleted in vitamin D, and that really does affect their immune system. So getting outside is the best way to get it, ideally. You're never going to make too much vitamin D from the sun. The body knows when to stop. Whereas if you're taking it supplementarily, then you can. So you want to check your blood serum levels. Sleep, as you know, is an amazing one for immune system. Super important. And getting those sleep cycles. I think people often don't go to bed early enough, and they're not fully taking advantage of, you know, the melatonin that's being produced, and we see an anti-cancer hormone as well. So that's really important. Physical activity, making sure that they're getting exercise. A lot of people, I think, if they focus on it, it's a funny thing to say, but I think people will almost come out of this quarantine period either fat or fit, because, you know, I see like on social and talking to friends, there's a whole range of people that are like, I feel like the fridge is talking to me, the refrigerator speaking to me. And then there's other people who are actually, let's really prioritize our health, because this is an opportunity where there's no commute. So you may have even lost out on exercise. Maybe some people are exercising as part of their commute, but actually for many, we're regaining time. That's another hour a day that we can use to build healthy habits. And we're not eating takeaways, because certainly here in the UK, everything's shut. So we're cooking at home, and we can use that time to introduce much healthier practices.
Yeah, I think one of the best things that I've experienced during this is really focusing on my sleep more than ever and going to sleep at a good early enough time and not using an alarm clock. I think if you are not working right now, you should absolutely get rid of your alarm clock and let your body wake up naturally. That'll also help identify your chronotype to some extent too as well, because whatever time you naturally wake up is what was dictated in your genetics to some extent. So I know generally I've been doing a pretty good job. I think people, like you said, fat or fit, they could also be sleep optimizing or sleep neglecting, because people will go and do Netflix binges until midnight, one in the morning, and then miss out on the opportunity to get proper healthy sleep and then function better the next day. I always tell people your best morning starts the night before. So good points.
And your best night starts the morning before
and
as
your
well, right?
Yes, and your best night starts the morning you wake up. Absolutely, yeah. So focusing on those things is fantastic. Yes, I agree. Sun exposure, getting outside, getting some exercise, proper nutrition, staying away from the fridge and the pantry and snacking all day. It's tempting, and especially if we're at home and kids and crazy stuff going on, but really focusing on the health, I think, is the proper way to optimize and keep that immune system strong.
Yeah, for sure.
One of my other favorite topics, and I think yours as well too, is this whole thing biohacking. Other than all the stuff we've talked about, there's different technologies and tips and tricks and gadgets, you know, what are some of the things that you've enjoyed in the past or recommend people to look at in terms of biohacking technology or recommendations? Anything there?
So yeah, one of my favorite toys is definitely my red light. I love that. Yeah. That's one of my favorite. And I think because you can simulate year round, you can simulate what you would have from the sun. So if you're not up with sunrise, or you're not, you know, you haven't got an open fire that you can sit by in the evening and kind of darken things. Red light's amazing. It's amazing for mitochondrial health, as you know, and upgrading the energy systems. It's also great in terms of improving your strength, improving your recovery for your workouts. So that's one of my favorites. What are the other hacks I use? I mean, I'm a big fan of Dr. Joe Dispenza's work. So with meditation, now some of his are really long, but one of my favorite things is he has a couple of meditations that are a bit shorter. They're kind of 20, 25 minutes. So one of my favorite things that sets me up for the day is actually meditating before I get out of bed. So it's like the very first thing I do before that cortisol response has taken over and it's trying to drive my day. I just find that my day goes so much better. But if I don't have time, I use the Muse headband. I don't know if you've ever used that. Mm-hmm. Have you used that?
Yeah.
The only thing I'd say with that is because of the birds that come in, I can get, because I may be a bit of a type A personality and quite competitive, that can spoil it sometimes, because then I'm like, I've got to get more birds. Because for everyone listening, you get birds if you're in the zone. So the birds will come in and the water that's running in the background becomes more intense if your thoughts are more disturbed. And then when you're in that calm kind of zen mode, then the birds come in. But then I'm like, why haven't I got so many birds?
Yes.
I need more birds. But I find that really good. I use the human charger in winter because, you know, from when we recorded the podcast on my show together in the UK here. In winter, it doesn't get light till 8 o'clock in the morning and it's sort of dark by 4 p.m. latest, yeah. pretty much. And so I would use the human charger in the morning to put that blue light in.
Yeah.
So those are just a few, yeah.
I love those. I mean, I have the same kind of setups as well. I have the big red light panel. What I do in the morning is, before anything else too, is I will do a meditation in front of the red light. And that
yes,
way I just kill two birds with one stone. And it's fantastic. It feels like a sunrise on a beach. It's a warm, beautiful feeling. Trying to avoid the temptation to turn my phone on and check, you know, all my messages and texts and social media and all the doom and gloom of all the news and get all that sympathetic activation. I'd rather just, you know, at least push it off for a while and just focus on myself, on my day. I've listened to different podcasts and different people, and I've listened to this intention expert. I don't remember his name, but he said the one thing he recommends in his entire book that everybody should say in the morning when they wake up more than anything else is, it's going to be a great day. And if you say that to yourself every morning, whether it is or not, that will set you up at least to have a better day. More likely than not, your day will be better when you say that. At least for me, it works. So obviously, some days are not going to be great, but at least if you go with that intention in the morning, more likelihood of good things happening. So that's one of my new hacks there.
I think that's a great one. It's a bit like affirmations, isn't it? And changing the programming. I was experimenting as well with, have you come across Marissa Peer's work in terms of the hypnosis she does?
No.
And you can download her audios. And it's crazy. She induced that hypnosis. She gets you to kind of look up. And even though this is guided, right, it's not like you've got a hypnotist in the room with you. And when you look up really high up, so you're almost rolling your eyes back, mm-hmm. that induces alpha brainwaves. Uh-huh. But as soon as you close your eyes, you get rapid eye movements. You can feel your eyes flickering. And you go into this very kind of highly suggestible state.
Interesting.
And that's something I've been playing. It's really fun as well. And again, not expensive. But I tell you what I did get, because you were the one that told me from the other side of the pond, is the Freestyle Libra. It's arrived. I was just looking at the box there,
fantastic.
But I haven't for monitoring blood sugar. So I'm going to be sharing that soon in terms of the results. So.
Oh, I'm jealous. That's on my list to get it here as well. I've been seeing so many posts of people putting their data up and all the bizarre things that happen that you would never expect to blood sugar levels. For people who are listening who don't know what that is, that's a continuous glucose monitor. It's like a little patch that you put kind of in your tricep area, and then you can wave your phone over it. It'll tell you what your blood sugar is at any time, which is really, really cool. I saw Ben Greenfield put something up where he said his blood sugar spiked when he went in the infrared sauna.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
Yeah, bizarre. So let me know
how that
goes.
But then really dropped later, didn't it?
Really dropped later.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit like you'll be able to tell your stress, because often people don't realize that their blood sugar will really rise in response to stress. So you can see that. And then another thing I've just done actually this weekend that I hadn't done before is the Dutch test. So mm-hmm. I've just done a complete analysis of all my hormones and a 5-test cortisol salivary response. So not just morning one, but all day. So again, I'll be getting the results of those in a few weeks. So yeah, I just always think if you're not measuring, then you can't change things to get results, right?
I love it. You're a proper biohacker with all this stuff. All right. So I've got a couple more and then we're going to wrap the show up. Something I ask my guest on the show is, do you have a specific nighttime routine that you like that helps you wind down and get into bed and get some good sleep?
Yeah. So I always, for at least 90 minutes, will put my blue light blocking glasses on. And that makes a big, big difference to my deep sleep. And I found that with a lot of clients, actually, it's a big game changer. I don't eat or drink anything for 3 hours before I go to bed. And I find that's the biggest, when I monitor on my Aura ring, more than anything else, whether I've had alcohol or anything, the biggest thing that drives my heart rate and affects my nighttime sleep is actually eating late and digesting food. I don't know what you found, but I think that really impacts it.
Yeah.
So I make sure I haven't eaten. I'm in that fastest state, which can help with things like growth hormone release and that deep repair. And then in bed, I will often listen to binaural beats when I'm going to sleep, just to kind of really calm myself down.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the biggest three components are going to be light, temperature, and food. Obviously, cool, dark room. But food seems to be the most impactful thing lately. I know that if I eat late or too close to bed, like you said, heart rate's going to be elevated and sleep is going to suffer. And then the other problem with eating late is the insulin melatonin antagonistic relationship, where if you're eating late, you're blocking melatonin release because of the way the receptors are set up. So I know it's a no-no. Sometimes, you know, we can't avoid it. We're in social environments and such, but if you're at home, especially now during quarantine, there's really not much going on. Focus on trying to eat early and then stop and drink and stop because liquid intake will also maybe wake you up, have to go to the bathroom, things like that.
Yeah, that's true. Light's a good one. I wear a sleep mask as well. I like to keep things dark.
You know, it's funny. I've worn them. And then when I don't wear them, even if I have a pitched blacked out room, I find myself waking up like squinting. Like, I don't know why. And I don't want to get those Botox lines on my forehead. So I need to wear my mask more because it just makes me more in a parasympathetic state where I'm just more calm and relaxed when I have something to cover your eyes. I think there's some activation going on through pressure points and things like that as well too, where you're able to almost like a weighted blanket, but on your eyes. I know there's the sleep crown. I haven't tried it, but there's this pillow that goes over your forehead and your eyes and your ears, and just your mouth and your nose are open, and it's weighted and it's super soft. And that seems to help people get into deeper sleep as well too. So
interesting.
We'll both have to try that one out.
Yeah, I'd like to try that one. Send me the link for that.
Will do. All right. So I think this has been fascinating. I've learned a ton. You have a very unique perspective when it comes to health optimization, different than just, you know, shooting in the dark and trying to do things on your own. Yours is a very scientific approach based off of DNA analysis and then coming up with optimized plans and routines. Very structured, very cool. If people want to learn more about you and what you do, where can they go?
So they can go to my website, which is angelafosterperformance.com. If they want to know a little bit more, I've set up a small mini course. I'm just finishing, but it should be live by the time this goes. Is if they go to bit.ly/DNA optimization, they can take a free with optimization with a Z, the US spelling. They can actually find out more about DNA. So the kind of things we've talked about and how that might help them. Also, I'm pretty active on social, so they can find me on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, on those platforms. I don't do as much on Twitter, but I'm on the other three.
Yeah, I'm on the other three as well too. I don't do too much on Twitter either. Although now we have to go on TikTok, I think. That's the newest one.
I know. But my kids are on TikTok. Yeah.
That says something about us, I guess. Yeah. But anyways, Angela, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me and thank you for sharing your knowledge with my listeners. It's been a pleasure. I can't wait to see you again. Actually, I can't wait to see you. We were supposed to meet in the Paleo FX, which I guess got canceled as well too. So looking forward to connecting with you in person once this settles down. And for people who want to learn more about this, I recommend you check out her information and her website. I know I'm currently in the process of doing that with her and will share that results with you once I get it out there. Angela, thanks again for joining me. Everybody, have a great day. Angela, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, all right. You made it to the end. Well, we made it to the end. And thanks for hanging in there all the way. I hope you enjoyed that show. She is a wealth of knowledge and information. And who would have thought doing DNA tests and then using those results to help optimize your sleep, your nutrition, your fitness. It's unbelievable stuff. I know some of the things she mentioned I haven't even tried, and I'm looking forward to working with her and taking my health to the next level. As always, if you want to learn more about me, you can follow me on my Instagram account. It's Sleep Biohacker. That's where I share all these different tips and tricks that I have done and some of them that I want to do. I'm also on a Facebook group, Sleep Biohacker. And if you've enjoyed the show, like I've said before, please, please help me with a quick little review on any podcast platform you're on, or share it with a friend or two who you think might benefit from this information. It's always nice to get this stuff out there for you. And the more people that hear about this show, the more it grows and the more awesome guests I can get on here. And we keep this party going. With that said, I hope you have the best night ever and talk to you soon.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only. Statements and views expressed in this show are not medical advice. The show, including Dr. Jay Corsandi, the co-host, guest, and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of any information contained herein. Opinions of the guests are their own. We do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests, nor do we make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. If you think you have a medical problem, please consult a licensed physician.